He's has a little bit more time, and so if you've been thinking of some questions that you have, I'm going to invite the moderators to take off the red dots. If you have a microphone, we'd invite you to come up. I'll also just make a little plug here. If you're interested in reading more, Dr. Gary Habermas and Mike Lacona, who's also in the room and who's going to join our panel discussion in just a few minutes, have written a book together called The Case for the Resurrection of Jesus. And very compelling in light of some of the things that are talked about here, and help you to get an understanding of all the proof and all the evidence that we have towards Jesus' bodily resurrection. So you'll notice Carrie's pasted the link there, and you can purchase the book there if that interests you. Again, Dr. Gary Habermas and Mike Lacona writing together The Case for the Resurrection. If you have a question, go ahead and put up your hand. If you don't have a microphone, if you can post the question in the text, I'll read the question on your behalf. And again, let's keep the questions real short, so that gives Gary maximum time to answer the questions for us. If you're looking for the raise hand button, it's just in the bottom right of your screen. You'll see you can press it there, and that'll move you to the top of the list, and I'll acknowledge you. While we're waiting, Gary, Ed Komoszewski has been asking for you to maybe just re-edify and help us understand why they never compared Jesus, Mary, and Judah DNA if they were so sure that it was a familial unit. Ed Komoszewski is asking that in regards to someone else who had posted it originally. So, Gary, if you can help us understand that, why did they never compare Jesus, Mary, and Judah, the three DNAs, if they were so sure it was a familial unit? Go ahead.
Originally, there were two conflicting answers to this. There was a report pretty close to the time of the Discovery Channel that said that Jacob Vesey, one of the two producers who put the special together for Discovery Channel, said something like, well, you know, we wanted to break the story. We thought it was newsworthy. And the implication was, at least they caused some to think this, that they were in a hurry, but if we would slow down a little bit, we could go back and do more DNA. So great question. But I think what's cleared up in the special, and in this, especially the discussion after the special. Now let me back up and give a little bit of real brief background. When the Jewish authorities find ossuaries, and they've not been robbed by grave robbers, which unfortunately is very common, when that happens, they take the bones and rebury them immediately because of the Jewish respect for bodies and the Jewish hope of resurrection of the body. So what's left in the ossuary is generally a little bit of this or a little bit of that, something, a fragment, maybe some blood, very old blood, but something that can be DNA'd. If I remember correctly, in the Ted Koppel discussion after the Discovery Channel's program last week, the point was that these were the only two ossuaries that had DNA-able material. So it wasn't like, well, we could have run it on Mary, but instead we ran it on Mary MD or Mary and Martha. We chose that one instead of the other one. My understanding is they didn't have any other choices. There was nothing else that had enough data that could be DNA'd, and hence only those two, and hence the negative connection.
Thanks for that. Appreciate your insights there. Gary, we've got another question in the text that I want to read to you. One of our listeners is asking, why would a poor family from Nazareth be buried in what must have been a very expensive tomb in Jerusalem? What's the thinking behind that, if you can answer that for us?
Sure. It was one of the points I mentioned, and it actually is, I would say it's a lesser point. The bigger points to me are the big three, the family grouping not being impressive, especially if there's a thousand Jesuses walking around in Jerusalem with Joseph for a father. The DNA was a no-show. And without the Mary MD argument, which is totally a bad argument, you can't get the statistics. Those are the ones that command the attention. I think those are the big comebacks. But down the list, where I gave other problems, one of them is it's not likely that a poor family or a middle-class family would have this kind of tomb. Now, there are possible comebacks. Somebody could say, well, Joseph Arimathea is identified as a rich disciple of Jesus. He put the money up for the private burial of Jesus. Why couldn't somebody who dearly loved Jesus put something up for the family tomb? They could come back like that, but I would say two things. Number one, it's not the normal answer, because you'd have to have some additional circumstances here that we don't know from the data. But here's the more telling thing, and I mentioned it earlier. With an extended family over multi-generations, you don't just come to Jerusalem and say, I'm going to start a new family tomb, because you've got family members in there. This remember how in the Old Testament, he was laid with his fathers and laid with his fathers and Abraham's and his family. They would go back to their father's tomb. You don't start a tomb in Jerusalem when James is martyred, for example. You don't start something in 62, 63 AD or even in 35 AD after Jesus. This has been going on for generations. And so I think that's a problem, saying, well, even if somebody did come forward to want to put the money up for this, you don't just up and move the tomb. And as I said, Jerusalem's not the normal place for it anyway. So, you know, just some brief thoughts there.
Great. Thank you for that. I'm going to ask you one more question. This is on behalf of Nora Mann. Nora Mann is one of our theology program students and a regular with us. And she asks, what's the significance of the other Mary identified as Maria, the Latin name for Mary, the mother of Jesus? If you can address that briefly.
Yes, and I basically argue that here's the problem. Mary comes in different forms. Miriam, Maria, Mary. Those are three of the most common forms in the ancient world. So to have a Maria there just is anything but rare. Approximately one quarter, 21 to 25% of all the Jewish women at that time were named Mary. I saw Josias, the curator of the museum there that cataloged this Talpiot, the ossuaries. I saw Joe say on a documentary that if you put cognates for Mary in there, the number almost doubles people who are named Mary, but at least 21 to 24%. And the issue with this, to me, is, so you have a Maria, which looks like it's the mother of Jesus, but we have several Marys right in the New Testament. We have Mary Magdalene, we have Mary the mother of Jesus, we have Mary and Martha, Lazarus' sisters. There are just several Marys right there in the New Testament. If you, whatever you do with Mary Imni, you may have two Marys in the same tomb, two Josephs, one or two Jesuses. And by the way, Yossi is thought by a lot of people to be Joseph, the father of this Jesus in the Talpiot tomb. But what I'm saying is, you can't make Mary stick. Even if that's his mother's name, and it's the most common or second most common woman's name, there are far too many Marys for this to be significant. So anyway, I mean, it could be as bad as this. There could be a Mary in the tomb and a Jesus in the tomb, and they may never have known each other. They could have been from another generation. They could be your brother's wife. They could be a cousin. You know, it's just no way to make the connection. So that's a little bit of the issue.
Well, thank you very much. Very thorough presentation to help get this program started. If you've joined us late, you've been listening to Dr. Gary Habermas here on Converse with Scholars, and he made a presentation about the find in East Jerusalem with the Jesus tomb, gave several points of reference for that, and has entertained a few questions. Dr. Habermas, we appreciate your time. We appreciate you coming back. We had some audio problems last week, but we're sure glad and thankful that you've been able to come back and join with us.